right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Sussman.
Hi, everybody. This is Mark Sussman. Thanks for tuning in to the Inspire Possibility Show. We've been doing these shows now for almost 4 years, and every week I invite various cutting-edge thought leaders who I hope will inspire us to think in new ways, to look at our challenges in new ways, to really inspire us to be happier, to be more productive, and to just think more. And I've interviewed probably close to 200 people now, and sometimes I invite some of my favorites back to the show, and I've invited Raz and Grassi, who not only is one of my favorites, he's a close friend, and we've done a lot of work together in terms of inspiring people to think in a new way. Raz is a former CEO of the Hoffman Institute and the founder of Hoffman Institute International, and I was talking to Raz the other day, and I was thinking about what are the biggest challenges that we all have, and I know that I think it comes down to really one or two things, but I thought I'd have a conversation with Raz about what our biggest challenges are. And we're going to also do a different format in the sense that Raz is almost going to interview me so that I get to talk a lot more, because normally when I'm interviewing somebody, I'm asking the questions, and he'll probably ask more questions to me. So welcome, Raz and Grassi. I'm hearing a little static on the phone. That hope is not on your end there.
I think it's pretty good. I'm talking to you from a landline, so there should be a minimum of static. And I was really excited that you invited me this week to kind of interview you, Mark, because you know we've known each other for 20 plus years, and over all that time, when I first met you, you were a lawyer. You had a long career as a lawyer.
Wow.
Working with people intensely, really, I think, understanding how people think and work. And then you switched over and became a life coach and an author and a public speaker. And all this time, you have been on a personal quest yourself to expand your own knowledge and your own personal sense of connection to the world and to yourself. So I thought it was about time that we hear from you. And so, well, Mark, I wanted to ask you, you know, given all you know and all you've observed in people, what have you observed, what's your perception of the underlying personal challenges, you know, that most people, you know, you might say keep them up at night? What do you work with people on more often than not?
Right. I think the biggest concern people have is uncertainty. People really are really, what keeps people up is worrying about an uncertain world. They worry about their jobs or relationships. They worry about the health of the world in terms of what's going to happen. A lot of people have been freaked out with the Trump administration, but we've had other administrations that have been challenging, to say the least, and we've had other problems that have occurred in the world that have been very challenging. I had lunch with my uncle recently who's going to be 98. He was born in 1920. And just think of all the things he's been through. Two world wars, a big depression, and I know when we get swings in the economy in the last 20 years or so, we've had some dramatic swings in the economy, but we still didn't go through the depression. And so.
Or World
what
War
I think
II.
It's if in World War II, exact. Yeah, or World War I. And so we really haven't had the challenges are a different nature. And I think part of the problem is that, you know, with the media, with the internet, and you can't even pick up your phone now. Most everybody has a smartphone. You can't even pick it up without some newsflash. And as you know, I love sports. You can't even watch a game without some newsflash coming on the screen about something happening in the world. You're watching a game to escape the world, and all of a sudden. So what I did was.
Well, Mark, don't you think we've people have liked diversions. Baseball used to be called the national pastime, and we all like to have things that are diversions and pastimes and hobbies. But, you know, anxiety, let's talk about that for a minute, because, look, the world is absolutely uncertain. None of us know what's one minute to the next. And it's always been that way. So why should people be more anxious now than they used to be? What do you think that is?
I think it has a lot to do with the media, with the fact that years ago, if there was a horrific event, you might not hear about it till the next day, or maybe that evening in the evening paper. Now they don't even have evening papers anymore. And if something happens anywhere in the world, you hear about it immediately.
And it feels like it happened. If you hear about something in Europe, it feels like it happened, you know, 20 miles away.
Exactly. And I think that's a big problem, is that we're bombarded. And as I said, you're even, you know, if you're watching we just had the NBA playoffs. You're watching the finals, and all of a sudden you'll see about some event that happened, you know, around the different places of the world.
50 years ago, Mark, newsrooms were not profit centers. And it was part of the deal for them to have, you know, for ABC, NBC, and CBS to have a license to broadcast. Their deal with the government was that they would keep the citizenry informed. And because an informed democracy, you know, an informed citizenry is necessary to a democracy. But then sometime, and I don't know when it was, 30 years ago, 25, the news rooms became profit centers, and now they're all competing with each other. And then you get cable news, and they present opinions as news frequently. So, yeah, I think what I'm hearing you point at, or at least what I feel, is that the news channels have a vested interest in keeping us on the edge of our seat. And they have a vested interest in keeping us uncertain so that we have to stay tuned all the time. Is that a little bit how you feel about it?
Exactly. And they do a real good job, too.
Okay, so now
they do a great job.
They do. Unfortunately, they do a great job of it.
Yeah.
Mark, what's the antidote to that?
Well,
you know, how do you manage? What do you think people could do?
Well, what I, as you know, I wrote The Soul of Uncertainty last year, and in some of the interviews I gave, people asked me that same question, and so I really have come up with what I call finding your soul of uncertainty.
Uh-huh.
And what does that mean, and how do you do that? And so I thought that would be a topic to what people can really do. And it's easy to remember what I'm going to talk about in the next 10 or 15 minutes. What we're talking is, and as you know, I love acronyms. I'm like a fanatic for acronyms because I think they help us remember things. You might hear something like 8 principles to do this or 6 to do this, and you're not going to remember that. But if you remember the acronym, you will. So I've come up with finding your soul of uncertainty. What is that? How do we remember it? First of all, I look at the word soul, and that is the acronym SOUL, S-O-U-L. And I take the first letter, and which is really the S really reminds me is that we have to tune into a higher power. We have to tune into spirit. So the S really reminds me of tuning into spirit. Find that spirit inside yourself, which really requires you to go deeper every day in the morning, is experience silence. Be in nature. You have to tune into spirit, because you have to get a sense that what's going on in the world isn't the only thing. So if you can tune in to spirit every morning, and even when I was a busy trial lawyer, I remember how no matter what time I had to be in the courthouse, I would still take time to meditate in the morning. And you know, different people have different practices to kind of tune them in, and I'm even shifting my practice a little bit now. But have a practice, whatever it is, in the morning, and meditation, yoga, tai chi, qigong, journaling is another good one. But do something every day so that you don't tune in to the news or to what's going on in the world. Something to shift your thinking. Music is there's a lot of meditative music that totally gets you into the now. So I would say whatever it takes to help you tune into spirit. And the way I would look at meditation is that when I first got into it, I meditate 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes in the end of the day. And the way I looked at it was meditating for 20 minutes was like taking a vacation from the concerns of the world. Whatever was going on, I figured.
Yeah, I was just going to say that you mentioned a lot of different ways, possibilities of tuning into spirit. And it reminded me of what I've thought of as a good working definition of spirit, which is whatever it takes to keep you in your heart. Because when we're anxious, you know, we're in our head. And
right.
And the real task is not to get completely out of your head, that is to say to turn your head off. It's not anti-intellectual, but when you connect your head and your heart together, then you have the intelligence of the intellect with the emotions and compassion of your heart, and those two together form a really higher intelligence than either of them alone. And so whatever it takes to keep you in your heart is what is spiritual. And I like what you said, that there are many different avenues. So people, you're encouraging people to discover what is your formula for staying in your heart.
Right.
And
right.
And so that's the ask. What is the O, soul?
Okay. The O, right, is for openness. So it's kind of leading in from the spirit. There are many ways, and those ways, again, some of your practices of tuning into your heart center, they're going to shift. And as I said, I'm starting to right now do a practice that I used to do years ago. And the O stands for being open to people, to the way the world changes. I think what happens is that we open to new ways of thinking, because we might have a job and we think of the job in a certain way. And all of a
right.
sudden, or being open to new possibilities. I mean, I think that people get stuck, and they're so afraid. People have this fear of the unknown. Again, back to uncertainty. They have the fear of the unknown, so they're not open to new possibilities. They stay stuck, and so have that openness, that willing to try new things, and to realize
that life does
change.
I like to think of myself as a person in search of a higher truth. That is to say that, yes, I have my perceptions, my judgments, my ideas of how things are, but if I can hold it a little bit, if I can hold it lightly instead of squeezing my grip on it, then I'm staying open, and I'm aware that probably, very possibly, there's a higher truth going on, and if I can access it, what I'm worried about may not seem so important.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to, again, when you it's kind of like you have a different vantage point,
right?
And to realize that
a bigger vantage point where you see more.
Yeah, it's like I often talk about climbing a trail. I used to you know, mountain bike a lot, and at the bottom of the trail going up the mountain, you can imagine what it's like to have the panoramic vision, but it's not the same if you go up there one step at a time, and you get to the top, and then you look, and you find out that as you take one step at a time, you see new possibilities that
right.
you didn't see before. And it's an amazing experience as you just look at this, instead of worrying about what's down the road, just take the step in front of you, which really goes back again to this idea of uncertainty, is instead of thinking again, take the step that's in front of you. Do what you need to do now, what you need to do today, and be the best you can today, and tomorrow
now,
will take
care
of itself.
Is that part of the you, or is that part of being open?
You know, I thought about that, and the O open and the U are very connected, but I think of the U as more of being unattached, not
uh-huh.
being attached to a result, right? Because what happens is that people, which gets into perfectionism and all that kind of stuff, is that people want it to be a certain way, and if they think it's not going to work out, they drive themselves nuts. So it's not being attached to a particular result. Because a lot of times what happens is if something doesn't work out, I've experienced it to where, and I'm disappointed, I experience disappointment. Sometimes what happens is I experience a new reality that is much greater than the reality I thought I wanted. And,
yeah.
and it's that idea to be open to possibility, to new possibilities, new way again of looking at life and new ways.
I remember, you know, more than 50, something like 50 years ago, in high school when we were studying Macbeth by Shakespeare, and a line jumped out. I think it was from Macbeth. Anyway, I've lived with it all my life, thinking it was from Macbeth, and the line was, painful realities are less than fearful imaginings. And so when we're afraid of something, it's like when we're afraid of something and the uncertainty of it, we let that get to us. But the pain, even a reality that's painful, we can face it and we can deal with it. So painful realities are, you know, better than fearful imaginings. And so something of what you're saying is if you're not so attached to what you're afraid of, you might find that you're actually adequate to what you have to deal with, right?
Yeah, plus the painful reality is a reality where the fearful imagination could be 20 times worse than
right.
the painful reality because, you know, you have the problem or whatever it is. You know, it could be anything. It could be, you know, relationships, business, health. But you deal with it, you do what you have to do. And you realize, you know what, it wasn't as bad as I thought. Where with a fearful imagination, again, you're living in the future. And you know,
right.
a lot of people talk about the power of imagination, and which I think is when people talk about visualization, and I know in the Hoffman process there's a lot of visualization and that kind of stuff, and visualizing what you want to guide it, a lot of guided imagery, which is very positive, and it's the use of the imagination of imagining this image that is being you're being guided to see, but imagination also on the
Mark,
other side of
I
that
want,
is worry.
I want to challenge you a little bit, okay? And that's like a challenge. I mean, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Challenge me all the time.
I know. That's what, and you challenge me too. So that's what we do. But anyway, what I was thinking about is that you said when you visualize what you want, and that too can be kind of a trap because people mostly when they're visualizing what they want, they're visualizing material objects. And I want a house, I want a car, I want a job that
right.
pays more money, I want this and that. I want my body to be slender and all this, whatever.
Right.
And so that is still part of the trap of not seeing reality as it is and imagining that I'll be happy someday, sometime, when things
right.
outside of me change, rather than using one's imagination in a positive, compassionate, resourceful way to build one's resilience and one's ability to be present to reality rather than imagining that I'm somewhere else. And so while I fully subscribe to the whole to the power of imagination, I think your definition of being unattached, you know, spirit open and unattached, mm-hmm. is you got to take it all together. And the unattached means not being attached to visualizing, you know, winning the lottery or something.
Right.
It's, you know, we are so attached and we're so subject to
right.
you know, what we all think of as the American dream. I think it sometimes has become the American nightmare.
That's a good point. I like
so
that.
So what is the L, Mark, on soul?
Well, I want to, before we get into the L, I did want to talk about one thing about, you know, about unattached and kind of, you know, your question a little bit. It is,
yeah.
I think that that to is when I talk about, you know, visualizing being, I look at it as visualize being the person you want to be.
Oh, I like
I think
that.
It really goes down to that. Visualize the person you want to be. If you
qualities.
Want to be a more loving person, see yourself as a loving person. See yourself as smiling. And so when I talk about, you know, imagining, is to see yourself that way. See yourself. So I use a lot of gratitude to help me do that in my morning practice. I really focus on what I'm grateful for. So every morning I focus on I'm grateful for my health, for my resilient body. I'm grateful for the love of my life, whatever that love is. And a lot of times people, they might not have a significant other, so they kind of think that they're not very good on, you know, well, how can I do that? I don't have a partner. But there's a lot of love in your life. And as we know from doing this work, as what we focus on expands because you start to notice it more. When you think about it a lot, you start to notice it. So all of a sudden, you know, I remember one time an old girlfriend had a green Volkswagen Bug. Once we broke up, all I saw on the road were green Volkswagen Bugs because it was brought to my attention. It was brought to my awareness, and what we focus on expands because we notice it more. So I would say gratitude is a huge practice. And I think I've shared with you, and I know our listeners have listened, I believe it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, to Emma Bell. Emma Bell is a retired judge from Scotland, and her husband have founded the Global Resilience Project. They've gone around the world from Scotland to 50 different not 50 different countries, but probably 20 different countries, interviewing people in their homes, including myself. They're releasing these videos of the people they've interviewed to really look at what are the common traits of people who have thrived, who have survived, not only survived, but thrived in the face of adversity and horrific events. It's an incredible project. She retired as a judge to take on this project, and what comes is the idea of gratitude, is that these people that have survived and thrived are very grateful, and that is something that I think that gratitude really helps us to tune in to our deeper self, which also, when you ask me about the L, it's love, to be grateful for the love that is in our life, not the love that we don't have, but the love that is. It might be the love we have for an animal, for a pet. And I just read about in the paper that Coco, this gorilla that's 46, just died. And there was a whole
yeah.
article about this gorilla that had a pet cat, and the thing that Coco knew 200 sign languages, which is amazing.
Right.
That's how it just
more than
just,
I know.
Yeah, me too. And so this idea of gratitude, of being grateful for the love that's in your life, which is, again, when we find our souls. So if you, again, every day, tune into spirit, be open-minded, don't be attached to the way you want it, because again, sometimes the way it turns out can be much better than the way you wanted it to be initially, as you're more open-minded and you see more possibilities. And let the love in. Let the love in and be willing to share it. And I think that if you do this every day, and to have this practice in the day and all day long about being open-minded, smile. Don't necessarily wait for somebody to smile at you. You be the one to put it out there. I know that sometimes people kind of, they keep score, and they go, well, I called them, and they haven't called me back. I'm not going to call them again. And what I'm saying is some of us by nature are just more outgoing, and we have more of a need. It really makes us – we have more of a need to express ourselves and to connect with people. And if
sure.
we're one
and,
of those
you know,
that have a need to connect with people, we want to put it out there.
Well, and then also sometimes it's good to connect with yourself so you can have actual solitude, which is different than loneliness, because you're in your meditation practice, you're choosing to be alone, but the being that you're connecting to is a deeper self where there is a source of gratitude and a source of love that wells up within yourself. And so you're also simultaneously open to yourself as well as being open to other people. So I think that this definition of soul that you've given us, spirit, open, unattached, and love, there's like different facets of a diamond. They're different parts of the same thing, and they really illuminate a philosophy that you have. And I like what you said about acronyms, so that's good.
Yes.
And I hadn't heard this before.
Right. Well, you know, I just really appreciate the time we've shared together in this context, because I know we did this before, probably 2-3 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
When I was just starting with the show, and I think it's really great that.
Well, a lot of times, you know, one of the things I've noticed, and I've certainly noticed it in our relationship, is that I've come to really appreciate the word edify. Edify means to build up, to bring out the best in someone. And that you and I have an edifying relationship so that when we're together and we talk, we get on a topic, we both leave bigger and stronger and more open, connected, you know, and loving than we did before. And one of the things I want to pitch a little bit here is to find those people with whom you can have or do have an edifying relationship, and take the time to have conversations like you and I have had here, Mark, and like you and I have frequently. If we take a walk
right.
or something like that, whatever we do.
Yeah. Well, it means a lot. It means a lot to me that you feel this way, because I feel the same way.
Good.
I feel the same way, and I'm you know, so grateful that you've taken the time to spend with myself and for our listeners that listen to the show regularly. And again, it what makes this special is that. I think when I first started the show with Ralph Marston, you were one of our first guests, and
right.
And now it's what, almost 3-4 years later, and I like the idea of yes, to be with people that, you know, like edifying. A lot of us use the word empower, but I like edifying. I think it's a more subtle distinction that really get us to really get us into. Make us feel better when we've been in their presence. You know,
I take on the job of building you up while you're taking on the job of building me up. And I don't mean in a
right.
phony way. I mean, just seeing the real person that we're talking to and that we're in a relationship with. And so you mentioned earlier, you know, you can smile at anybody, you can do something. I've found that you can edify people almost always, and sometimes it's just a glance of compassion and issuing you know, you're in a grocery store and there's a young mother with two kids and standing in the grocery line, and you know, you may not do anything, but you can give her a knowing glance and a smile, and just send a little from your heart, a little you know, sense of compassion, a blessing. Send a blessing to her, and those things matter to other people and to yourself. And so, when you're taking care of someone else, you're also taking care of yourself, don't you think?
Absolutely. You know, we're going to have to continue this interview another time because we're running out of time. So I want to again remind our listeners that our guest today has been Roz Ingrassi of the Hoffman Institute. And by the way, it's a great training. You can go to hoffmaninstitute.org and find out about their work. And until next week, in the meantime, journey on.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.